Chapter 53. Abel Hammett watched the rays of the setting sun sparkle like balls of fire atop the loafing waves of the Mediterranean. Standing on an open bridge wing, the Israeli ship captain watched the sun drop beneath the horizon, ushering in a welcome evening breeze. Sucking in deep breaths of the cool air, he swore he could detect the smell of Turkish pine trees from the shoreline ahead. Peering over the distant prow of his vessel, he could just begin making out a few twinkling lights along the southern Turkish coast. Temporarily refreshed, he stepped back onto the bridge of the Dayan to complete his watch. At just under 100 meters in length, the Dayan was a relatively small tanker, certainly minuscule in comparison to the supertankers that plied oil from the Persian Gulf. Though sharing most of the characteristics of the crude carriers, she had actually been purpose-built for a slightly different cargo. Fresh water. Spurred by a recent trade agreement, the Israeli government had 3 identical vessels constructed to transport water to its dry and dusty shores. Sitting 250 miles across the Mediterranean from Israel, Turkey was one of the few countries in the arid region that actually possessed a surplus of fresh water. Controlling the headwaters of both the Tigris and Euphrates, as well as other rich highland rivers, it sat on a strategic resource that would only grow in importance in the coming decades. Tapping it as a new export, the country had agreed to sell a tiny fraction of its water to Israel in a trial trade deal. Dayan carried just over 1 million gallons, and Hammett knew its contribution to Israel's water supply was a drop in the bucket. But the biweekly commutes across the Med ultimately added up. For him, it was easy sea duty, and he and his 9-man crew enjoyed the work. Standing in the center of the wheelhouse, he studied the ship's progress on a navigation monitor. "Engine back 2/3, he ordered the helmsman. "We're 40 miles from Manavgat. No use in us arriving before daybreak, since the pumping facility won't be manned any earlier." The helmsman repeated the order as the speed was reduced on the ship's single engine. Riding high on the sea with an empty hold, the tanker gradually slowed from 12 knots to 8. As midnight approached a few hours later, the executive officer appeared on deck to relieve the captain. Hammett took a final scan of the radar system before turning in.
"There's a vessel coming up behind us off our port flank, but otherwise the seas are clear," he told the exec. "Just keep us off the beach, Sev."
"Yes, Captain," the man replied.
"No midnight swims tonight."
Hammett retired to his cabin a deck below and quickly fell asleep. But he awoke a short time later, feeling something amiss. Shaking away the cobwebs, he realized that the ship's engine was not throbbing and shuddering through the deck as usual when underway. He thought it odd that no one had come to wake him if there was a navigational problem or mechanical issue with the ship. Slipping on a bathrobe, the captain exited his cabin and climbed a stairwell up to the bridge. Stepping into the darkened wheelhouse, Hammett froze in shock. A few feet in front of him, the executive officer was lying face down in a small pool of blood.
"What's going on here?" he barked at the helmsman.
The helmsman stared back at him in wide-eyed silence. Under the dimmed lights of the bridge, Hammett could see that the young man had an ugly gash across the side of his face. The captain's vision was suddenly diverted out the forward window, where he noticed the lights of another vessel shining dangerously close to the tanker's port beam.
"Hard right rudder!"
he shouted at the helmsman, ignoring a rustling behind him. A tall figure emerged from the back wall, dressed in black, with an ebony ski mask covering his head and face. In his hands, he held an assault rifle, which he raised to shoulder height. The helmsman ignored Hammett's command, merely staring as the gunman stepped closer. Hammett turned and looked just in time to see the rifle whipping toward his face. He heard the crash of the gun's stock strike him on the side of the jaw an instant before a flash of pain surged through him like a bolt of lightning. He felt his knees buckle, and then the pain vanished as everything turned to black, and he joined his executive officer flat on the deck.